tomorrow. As recorded before a live audience in Pasadena, California, Garner Ted Armstrong brings you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
When you tell people this is not God's world, that God is not in the marriage business, that God is not in the contracts or the construction business, that God is not in the law business, that God is not in the hospitals, that God is not in government, that God is not in the educational institutions, you don't find him in art, literature, and music, he is not in science, God is not in Washington, in spite of what you've heard. God is not in the Kremlin. God is not in Germany. God is not out in the desert. There was a kid who came here years ago and went out in the desert to find God. I don't think he found anything. So he made some horny toads and sandbirds. I don't know what he found, but he didn't find God. You can walk down the corridors of hospitals and look for God if you'd like. You can go downtown and look in the movies for God. You can look in the supermarkets and the drugstores for God. You can look in Detroit on the assembly lines for God. You can hear his name a lot. But you can't find anything at all about his way, about his mind, about his life, about his government, about his way of doing things. You can't see God interfering in humanity. Now, because of the fact that millions of people believe in the myth that this is God's world, and that God has something directly to do with their lives, no matter how they live their lives, those same people cannot reconcile a terrible tragedy without blaming God, without putting some consequence or some action of some kind at God's door and blaming him. But this is not God's world. That's why God has said to the Old Testament times that he gave them over to laws that were not good, to precepts, to ordinances that were not good. He says he allowed them to have, he gave them up to. Let's notice in the first chapter of the book of Romans, he says the same thing of modern day philosophers and our educational systems in this world, of the people who really are the intelligentsia, who set the standards for society. And these individuals basically have the same type of evil penchants, the same kind of evil designs, desires, and emotions that he said would happen to those who made an altar with steps on it and began to get artistic and made nice little designs on it. Most of them are sexually upside down and backward. Too many people, especially in government, as well as in many other professions, and you would be absolutely dumbfounded if you knew the tremendous percentage in the designing industry, in the clothing industry, in art, in physiotherapy, in some of our military institutions. Every sixth man begins to make you wonder if it's not the wrong title. Maybe it ought to be every other man. But it does say in the first chapter of the book of Romans that God gave them up to these things. Verse 18, the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress. The Greek word is katabalo, or hold back. Not hold, but hold back. Look it up in other versions of the original and you'll find the truth of that. Who hold back the truth in unrighteousness, because that which may be known of God is evident to them. For God has shown it unto them. We've done that in the articles in the plain truth and the good news. The closer you look at that which God makes, the more beautiful, the more microscopically perfect. When you look at symbiosis between animal and plant, when you look at various creatures who are separate and absolutely perfectly designed, but yet they cannot live without each other, as in cleaner fish or in various parasites even, though it's an unpleasant topic, it nevertheless is true, including your own digestive system. You, as a human being, happen to be host to millions upon millions of bacteria. Your body, from the little yeast spores floating around in the air and landing on your nose right now, all the way to what is inside your nose, and don't just disturb it right now, if you please would do me the favor, to what is inside your ear, don't disturb that either, wait till later, to what is inside your body, plays host for millions upon millions of all types of bacteria. If it did not, you could not remain alive. You wouldn't digest your food. You wouldn't have a battle going on in your nasal passages all the time where these little things are making war one with the other. Millions of them are killing off millions of the others. And sometimes when the loyal troops lose, you end up with a cold or the flu. And it's only when the loyal troops are beating off the enemy all the time, keeping them away from your nose and your various your mouth and whatnot, that you win the battle. You don't get the cold. So we could know, whether we look at nature, whether we look at flora and fauna, mineral properties of matter, that God does exist. The invisible things of him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made. Now, they knew God, that is, anciently, and that is true, because God ate, walked, talked, slept, got down in the dirt, and wrestled with man. They glorified him not as God, neither were thankful, but became vain in their imaginations or their reasonings. And their foolish heart was darkened. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools. Now, that's what we do today. We profess ourselves to be wise. If a man has authority, he has authority because some other man gave it to him. He has authority because somebody signed the scroll, signed the document, gave him a degree, gave him a blue ribbon and a gold seal, and he can frame it and put it on his wall. And it says right there that he's a doctor and is therefore licensed to open up your intestines and probe around, cut out a little bit, and find out whether he can fix you up. But you know that he is a bona fide, quote, good, end quote, doctor, and not that, you know, mythological doctor slop, or the guy who is a little careless and says, oops, and you say the proverbial answer to that, I know what I mean when I say oops, but what do you mean when you say oops? But we profess ourselves to be wise, we slap ourselves on the back, we give ourselves degree, we recognize each other, and God recognizes none of it. And change the glory of the uncorruptible God into an image made like to corruptible man, and to birds, and four-footed beasts, and creeping things. And when you look at the imagery, whether you talk of the gargoyles on the roof or the overhang of Notre Dame in Paris, or whether you look at the art of some of the museums of Europe, you look at that which masquerades as demons in some of the drawings that you can find in the hippie boutiques of today, you see demonism and creeping things and corruptible beasts and so on that are supposed to be creatures in the spirit world. And it gives you a clue as to what kind of a mind is really guiding that type of activity. Wherefore, God also gave them up. He allowed them to have. He just divorced himself from them. He turned his back, walked away, and said, you can have it. He gave them up to uncleanness through the lusts of their own hearts to dishonor their own bodies between themselves. What was the really underlying motive in all of this? Again, perversion. Who changed or exchanged, as it should read, the truth of God into a lie and worshipped and served the creature more than the Creator, who is blessed forever. So they worship creatures. I suppose that I may have even given a twinge of conscience to a couple of you people when I said I knocked off an elk. I don't care. I'm going to go kill a deer in the next couple of weeks if I can, so just enjoy that. But I'm going to knock him off. I'm going to shoot him right in the third rib if I get the chance. Most painless way I know to kill them. Now, I'm going to eat a steak next week. And the way that they're going to give me that steak isn't going to be anywhere near as painless as what I'm going to do that deer. They ship those cattle in trucks and on trains. They let them smell that blood. They let them listen to the frightened lowing of the other cattle. They herd them in a chute, and they're taken off the place where they grew up and away from their comfortable old cows and the bull that they like so well and all the folks around the farm. And here they are instead in this chute with all these other guys looking around, all these other gals, rather, and wondering what's going to happen to them. And one by one, they go up there, and they hear the crack of this gun, they smell the smoke, they smell the blood, they hear the frightened sounds, and you wonder why you get tough meat. You'd tense up, too, if that's what they were going to do to you. But you may not know it or not, but they shoot cows with a .22. They don't shoot them with a .30-06 or a .270 or a .338 Magnum, which only lacks wheels to qualify for a cannon. They shoot them with a .22. As a matter of fact, in our own meat processing plant one time, and it can happen because some cows can be about as thick-headed as some people, and this one was thick-headed, and I guess maybe some loads are not as uniform, but anyhow, they shot this thing, and it shook its head and got up and ran off. And I guess they had to chase that thing all through the woods and practically hunt it down. But that'll happen once in a while, too. So nevertheless, I think some people worship creatures. And I see some of the do-gooder organizations that want to put all hunters, you know, in some special place reserved for bloodthirsty killers. And they sometimes influence television shows and all that type of thing, trying to do it with hunting. Well, God says that you shall eat the roebuck, and I intend to obey him. And the only way I'm going to get one of those things with a gun, I'm sure not going to coach him up with white bread and a ball-peen hammer, as I said. Worshipped and served the creature more than the Creator, and they do. For this cause, again, notice, as it said in verse 24, God gave them up to uncleanness, and again in verse 26, for this cause God gave them up unto. He let them have it. He just turned them over. Forget it. Unto vile affections. For even their women did change the natural use into that which is against nature. So lesbianism and homosexuality among women was a common result of rejection of God's laws. Rejection of God's laws means rejection of the family structure. It means rejection of the fact that the man should be over the woman, and that the woman ought to be a keeper at home, that she ought to bear children and bring up children, and that she ought to be a partner with the husband, answering exactly to him. And likewise, the men, leaving the natural use of the woman, burned in their lust one toward another, men with men working that which is unseemly, and receiving in themselves that recompense of their error which was meet. When you've talked to someone, as I have in the past, who has been involved in that very tight-knit organization that oftentimes will be quite a clannish thing in the homosexual communities of some of our big and rather filthy cities that are like Sodom in God's sight. And you see, a person who actually wants to be converted, a person who can come to understand with his mind a great deal of God's truth, but whose body and whose psychological and sexual hang-ups had become so absolutely perverted and so twisted that it is just like a fight. Now, a normal person has problem understanding that. They cannot for one moment even fathom, but then that's just disgusting and so on. They would have a hard time. I guess the only way to understand it is to say it must be just about like heroin, or like mildest thing, I guess, would be to say the smoking habit or something else, where a person might with his mind want to quit smoking. But his nerve endings and his body keep craving this weed because he's hooked on it. Now, a lot of these people get into that kind of a community, but what you don't realize is that they are vicious, that oftentimes it is a very high crime area, that oftentimes there are murders that are committed between homosexuals because of jealousy. And the Bible here says that they receive in themselves that recompense of their error which was meet. And I happen to believe that I once heard from a man, both talked to him and later got a letter, who should have been and who wanted to be converted and be a member of this church. But he understood with the mind the truth, and he wanted to accept it, but he was just too far gone. And there was no way in this life, short of Almighty God killing him and resurrecting him, giving him a whole new brain, starting him all over again, I guess, that even though he wanted to repent of that background, he was utterly unable to totally cut himself off from it. And he went right back into it. So it says, even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over. Now we've seen that three times in these few verses. Verse 24, God gave them up to uncleanness. For this cause, verse 26, he gave them up to vile affections. Verse 28, he gave them over to a reprobate mind. God has continually been turning loose of man. God has continually been giving over to man all the slop, all the garbage that he wants. And he's tired of man standing knee-deep in the garbage that he wants, blaming God for every unfortunate circumstance of this garbage-ridden life. But that is exactly the way we are. I wonder how many times in an argument with someone else you've ever heard a person say, "That's right, I'm wrong." I wonder how many times instead you hear people use every conceivable argument to justify themselves, because that is human nature and that is the way we are. What are the consequences of walking off and rejecting God's way and God's laws in our lives, in our societies, in our institutions, in our organizations, and even in the churches? And even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a reprobate, which is a defiled and a corrupt mind, to do those things which are not convenient. That's a really unfortunate translation. It's not a matter of being a little inconvenient. It's due to do those things which are totally and horribly evil. Being filled with all unrighteousness, fornication, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, debate, deceit. In other words, every evil aberration of human behavior that you can imagine. They are maligners, whisperers, backbiters. You know what reminds me of this thing that came up about Earl Butts and John Dean? Here is Dean, who was in jail. Here is Dean, who was one of the Watergate conspirators at some degree or another. I've forgotten now. I just got sick of reading it years ago. But here is this apparently very filthy joke that is told, which I'm sure Dean has told himself or told others worse than, and probably laughed at it when he heard it. But the thing is, here are these guys standing knee-deep in slop and garbage, and yet in their self-righteous desire to poke at other people will rise up and begin to persecute people, especially anyone they think is a holdover or a carryover from the Nixon administration, which they hate, no doubt. because they feel that they got had under the Nixon administration. But to me, it is exactly like the analogy I drew of those people looking at the resignation of Nixon in Porno Row in New York City. I came out of a radio station, and here were the lights festooned across there in one of these moving billboards, you know, giving the news, Nixon resigned. And here these people, all these drunks and pimps and queers and crooks and addicts and pushers and all these other people standing around the streets of this really seamy, horrible part of New York City, looking up there in great righteous relief that the president had been caught covering something up, lying, using some unfortunate language, and so on. But to me, the hypocrisy of people who do infinitely worse and yet want to condemn others is ridiculous. One thing God cannot stand, I guess, is hypocrisy. Is claiming someone else is guilty of the very thing you're guilty of yourself. God really doesn't like that very well. 30, backbiters, haters of God, despiteful, proud, boasters, inventors of evil things, disobedient to parents, without understanding, covenant breakers, without natural affection, but plenty of the unnatural, implacable, you can't change them, you can't move them, you can't shake them, you can't repent or apologize, get them to change their mind, unmerciful, who knowing the judgment of God, that they which commit such things are worthy of death. Read that whole list and look what God says is guilty or is worthy of capital punishment and stack that up alongside our society. Not only do the same, boast, envy, cheat, deceive, whisper. You mean a whisperer? You mean someone who is a talebearer? You mean someone living just on the fringes of the church who is still wallowing around in rumor is worthy of death? Is that what God is saying? Well, whisperers listed there. I don't know. Maybe you'd better judge that for yourself. But he says, worthy of death, not only do the same, but they wallow in it. They revel in it. They have pleasure. They are like birds of a feather that flock together. They gravitate toward people who do likewise. I've always been a student, since I came to Ambassador College at least, of human nature, and have talked a great deal in the past about the tendency of people to seek like and like, of people to gravitate together. I must have given dozens of forums in my time, I suppose, of trying to tell freshmen just because you end up being assigned the same dorm as somebody doesn't need to mean that you leave the college when they do. But that's been really not to much avail. It's always been rather profoundly interesting to me that young kids can be accidentally put together, and in a matter of days or weeks, they are so utterly committed one to the other because of certain likes or certain similarities, they make certain commitments that an attitude of one will almost always be adopted immediately by the other one. And this kind of a group instinct of human nature, of people who have the same hurts gravitating together. I once knew a couple who gravitated together because of their mutual hurt, because they were very much in pain, because of frustrations and problems in the past, and because they could weep and they could whine and they could wail about how they'd been misunderstood and mishandled and mistreated, and life had dealt them a vicious kick and a terrible blow. And so they formed a bond and got married on the basis of that mutual agreement that the world was a pretty rotten place. What kind of a bond is that for a marriage, and how long is it going to last? It makes you wonder. But, you know, there is that type of thing of the gravitation together of people that have mutual problems and also people that mutually commit the same sins. Not only do the same, but have pleasure in them that do them. Therefore, you are, and he follows on, it's a shame really in a sense that they broke it up into chapters because the Bible didn't intend that necessarily, because he says, in the light of all of this, and that's the way the world is, you are inexcusable, O man, and here again he condemns hypocrisy. For wherein you judge another, you condemn yourself. For you that judge, do the same things. But we are sure that the judgment of God is according to truth against them which commit such things. And thinkest thou this, O man, which judge them that do such things, and doest the same, that you shall escape the judgment of God? You have to read the whole story and get the entire thing. Elijah told the prophets of Baal they had to make a choice, and it was all black and white, right or wrong, good and evil. There wasn't any gray in between. He recognized it was either all the way with God or none of the way at all. And so he said, choose you this day whom you shall serve. And of course, he put the prophets of Baal to death. Is this God's world? What if God supernaturally were to intervene and to make people quit suffering from lung cancer? Now, it is a betraying thing. It's a hideous thing, especially within the church and the people you know and love, when someone you love suddenly discovers they've got cancer. You just can't believe it. It is a dirty, rotten, despicable betrayal, the way you feel about somebody discovering cancer. Why did God let that happen? Look back in life. Look back at the family. Look back at diet. It doesn't matter how careful you are in the restaurants. Living in this society, you cannot avoid the dyes, the colors, the artificial sweeteners, the preservatives, the processed foods, the various things they put into your meat, and so on. You are getting your daily diet of chemicals. I don't care how careful you are. And some of those are carcinogenic. They're going to cause cancer. But what if you saw a man in a park bench trying to reach for a cigarette, and he got about this far, and he wrestled to the ground, and he falls all over the place, and his arm flipping around in the air, and he's foaming at the mouth, and every time he reaches for his pocket, his arm flies out like that. Finally, he's on his hands and knees gnawing the bark off a tree, going around and around in circles. The cops come along to take him away. He's a mindless idiot. Because that's exactly the way a mature man would feel if he couldn't reach for his own cigarettes. I mean, if God came along and just stopped him with an invisible governor of some kind, wouldn't let him smoke that cigarette, he would go into insanity. I really do believe that that is true. He would not realize God was trying to do what is best for him. Have you ever seen a kid when a mother was going to pick him up, try to get him out of problem? You know, I've seen that happen in church. Now, when a kid stiffens up, they can be stiffer than a piece of bacon after an hour in the stove, man. I mean, they can be almost brittle. You pick up a kid, normally they're kind of soft. They bend a little bit, put the little bottom here. They kind of fit in your arm. You pick one up when he's mad, and you got to be careful because you just slip right through your grasp because you just get all stiff, and they don't want you to carry him out of there, you know. The feet are straight out. You can't believe how stiff a kid can get at a time like that. It's exactly the way we are with God. It's the way we would be if God tried to pick us up physically. Be like that little kid. We just get all stiffened up and unresilient. What if you tried to see, imagine in your mind's eye the way movies would be if this were the millennium? And you couldn't even show a crime movie. In the first place, the guy who tried to think about a crime movie or try to get the actors or try to get it on film wouldn't be allowed to. But if God would allow it to get that far, and he even came to the ridiculous part where the crime was about to be committed. Here's a crook trying desperately to get a gun out of his pocket, and he cannot do it. And finally ends up gnawing his own arm in utter frustration. The fellow's trying to neck with his girl. He's reaching for her, and he just can't. And she's right there, and his lips look like Jerry Lewis trying to get a hold of an ice cream cone, you know. No, and he just can't. She will not, she's trying to kiss him, he's trying to kiss her, and they just can't quite reach, you know. Must be a horrible sight. See this guy in front of a porno shop, walks down the street, looks around, trying to make sure nobody's watching, starts in, right back out again. And just like there's an unseen revolving door, and he runs into it, and he can't go in there. Can you imagine a man hitting a bad golf shot someday and saying, well, I'll tell you one thing, that sky is blue and the grass is green and I'm a bad golfer. That would sure be a twist on what they usually say when they hit a bad shot. No, people cannot cope with great serious problems and even oftentimes with the lighter ones. They like to blame God for practically everything that happens. Well, I had to grow up enough to learn that that was just one of those tragic happenstances because God himself was not interfering. He was not intervening. I'll tell you, one day, though, I may find out, and this sounds like an awful, awful pompous thing to say, and I don't mean it that way at all. I may find out that because I have been able to use the example of Ron and Don Koch's death on platforms before live audiences all around the country, and before millions of people on national color television, to get across that lesson that more people have heard about their death than heard during Jesus' day when he talked orally of those men upon whom the tower in Siloam fell, or the ones who were put to death by the swords of the Roman soldiers, those Galileans that Jesus talked about. Perhaps, when all is said and done, some of the examples like that that have been used, that have been perpetuated, and perhaps will even form a part of the literature of the world tomorrow in that part of the Bible which is yet to be written, will go down in posterity, and generations of that time will have a far greater concept of the purpose for those deaths than we do during this day. When people ask me about why did God let it happen, I tell them exactly what I told that man, the NAB in Chicago. God had nothing to do with it whatsoever. Now, if they are in the church, it's a little more difficult to answer that question oftentimes, because we like to think we have God's protection. And it's a pretty horrible, shameful thing when suddenly something happens that we just can't understand. A loved one dies, somebody has cancer, someone is killed in an automobile accident, somebody is terribly injured, and we kind of look around. But let me warn you, under no circumstances ever, to the last little shadowy nth of a degree, is it God's fault. It is never God's fault. It's always our fault, our responsibility, and the other fella are in there somewhere. But God is not responsible. Anytime I want to, when I'm flying an airplane, I can kill myself. Satan the devil tried to tempt Jesus Christ to do just that. He asked him to throw himself down from a high place. And Jesus said, "You shall not tempt the Eternal, your God." Any time that I'm flying along, all I've got to do is reach for the wrong knob someplace. I know exactly where they are and what they are. And I can kill everybody aboard. My mind would never, at the point of a gun, do that, because my mind is so disciplined and I'm such a big coward about dying in that airplane that I would not think of reaching for that knob. I probably, on the other hand, would have to repent for doing something very unchristian if somebody, if he were on the jump seat, tried to reach for one of those knobs. I think his teeth would be buried all the way through my elbow, but they would be extracted from his mouth. I think that would be just a normal reaction, but he wouldn't get close to them, believe me, because I wouldn't want someone saying, "Well, why did God let Garner Ted fly that falcon into that mountain?" If that ever happens, it isn't going to be any reason whatsoever that you're going to be able to figure out beyond just happenstance, I'll guarantee you that. But it isn't going to be deliberate. So I think I've solved the problem, so far as I'm concerned, of why my two sons are deaf, why my mother died, why my brother died, why Ron and Don died, why that little girl died the other day, and why people are going to die tomorrow, and there's more bad news in the newspapers the next day or two. This is not God's world. There are a precious handful of people who are able to peer through a little tiny keyhole, through a black obscure blanket of stupidity and ignorance around this earth, who can barely perceive and see very dimly what may be in the future in the world tomorrow. And those people are tremendously blessed and greatly favored, but even they are the struggling, motley group, the remnants of a very weak church, the last remnant before the second coming of Jesus Christ, and no great and huge, exalted, inspiring miracles are going to be along to titillate their senses and to inspire them and to reassure them. And as long as we're human and we fail, we make mistakes, there are people who are going to be hurt and people who are going to die. Don't ever make the mistake of blaming God, because that's one way to let the devil in. You know that God had nothing to do with it. It's always us who came up short.
Garner Ted Armstrong invites you to learn more about these important issues through the pages of Good News magazine. This full-color monthly publication underscores the importance of biblical understanding in modern 20th century living. The Good News magazine. Your subscription is free of charge. There is no cost or obligation. The Good News. You have heard The World Tomorrow with Garner Ted Armstrong, sponsored by the Worldwide Church of God. For literature offered on this program, send your requests along with the call letters of this station to Garner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California, 91123. Or you may dial this toll-free number, 800-423-4444.